another exciting broadcast day.
Yes, indeed, indeed. 866-901-ADAM, 866-901-ADAM. How say you? Good morning, Teresa Strasser.
Good morning, Adam Carolla.
Good morning, Bald Brian.
Hi, boy.
Ah, yeah, that's right. Joel McHale's going to be in studio today. Also, we're giving away some Dancing with the Stars tickets. Comedian Dave Attell's going to be in here. We have a doctor. He's the toddler whisperer. I was told about this guy, Dr. Harvey Karp. He has been featured on a bunch of these shows. He basically gets 2-year-olds to do what you want them to do. I'd like him to do a little whispering to Sonny to
about
perhaps
us eating.
Eat a little mac and cheese. Oh, I did Loveline last night.
How was it?
Very uneventful. Doctor,
how long did you end up staying for? I tuned out at 10:40. I had to go to bed.
Thank you for listening. I stayed. Then you could. Okay, couple things that stop me if I'm lying.
I heard about 60% of it. So,
Doctor. Dr. Drew was eating pretzels and watching his TV show on the monitor the entire first segment. So it was this sort of him not saying anything, lean back. You could hear the sort of silent crunching in the background while he watched himself on the monitor. Yes, I had to yell at him. It was like we didn't miss a day.
It was the funny thing. At least we could count on you not to bring it up. During the show.
Well, you can hear crunching into the microphone.
Now, was he the one that banged his coffee mug like that on the mic?
Dr. Drew had about 5 habits that drove me completely insane. He would do, there's a few things he liked to do.
Help people?
That was 6. I'll give you the list in ascending order.
Okay.
He would start at number 5. There was a policy, our intern got us a cup of coffee, but she would not do it until the show started. So right as the show started, you'd hear the door open, then you'd hear Drew go, "Thank you." And then you'd hear this. You'd hear the mug slam down on a thing, and then you'd hear the door close. I somehow was an out-of-control maniac because I suggested that the coffee should arrive at the studio before the show began, so that we didn't have to go through the ritual of Drew banging the cup against the microphone, hearing the cup hit the thing, and then hear Drew say thank you to the bodiless person that was leaving the studio,
right,
and then hear the door close. I would say, you know, all you got to do is bring the coffee mug in 30 seconds before the show begins, and we'd be just fine. Too tall an order, evidently. They'd pull together 1 or 2 days of that, and then it'd go right back to the same thing and the same thing.
You know what really probably messed it up was we alternated. The people who brought the coffee, and I was one of them, alternated weeks. So probably for about a week, it would come in on time. I'm not going to say who brought it in on time. Mm-hmm. The next week, of course, it'd be late, and then it would go right back to the cycle.
Thank you, and whatever.
The vicious cycle.
And Drew would do things like when Drew would set down a coffee mug, he wouldn't do it like, I'll do the thing where I'll put a little bit of my finger underneath it so it touches first,
right,
and then sort of slide. Drew just dropped that thing right down, and then he'd like throw his keys down. And
number 4,
he liked to eat. He'd chomp away on
pretzels.
Once in a while,
whatever the loudest food he'd get his hands on.
Right. Once in a while, he would. Once in a while, he'd check his email and do stuff like that, and just kind of you can tell like. You know when people say they haven't drifted off, but they've drifted off? Like, you go, you can see they're clearly preoccupied with something. They've been looking at their email for a while. They haven't said a word in 12 minutes. And then you go, hey, man, how about you folks? And they get real defensive. They go, I can hear you.
I'm listening to everything you're saying.
I'm listening. Yeah. Fine, you're doing a radio show and answering emails, though. How? Tune in. And by the way, what do you think is happening? You're super tuned in and on top of the conversation, and I'm just accusing you? Is that how you think it works? Like, we've established eye contact, you're participating in all these calls, and yet I just stop in the middle of the entire thing and go, hey man, wake up. That's how it works?
Now, how was it between you and Stryker? Comfortable?
I was fine with Stryker. Evidently, Stryker, who took over for me over there at Loveline has probably been fed a steady diet of you suck and no one's as good as Adam.
Right. Because that's bound to happen.
It's bound to happen, although it shouldn't go on for 2 years. I think it's
that's unusual.
I think that's the problem.
2-3 months, and then everyone gets over it, but they haven't.
I don't know how many people are over it. All I know is he seemed like he had like he seemed like a guy that had heard that "Where's Adam" refrain many times and did not seem excited to have Adam from "Where's Adam" in the studio. But he's gotten over it.
He seemed remarkably subdued for Stryker.
He's past it. I think he may have been intimidated or something. I mean, everything was good. Everything was copacetic, except for Dr. Drew, because I said to Drew, I said two things. I said, I'm coming on to Loveline. I realize what, I know what's happened. I mean, I'm seeing the lay of the land as it pertains to my movie, The Hammer. Every single person that sees the movie goes, wow, that was really good. Wow, you were really good. Wow, I really enjoyed that. With that sort of thing where they go up.
Right.
You know, hey.
That's the surprise up sound.
Yeah, that was really good.
Oh, you can act.
You're good. You can act.
You look good.
The movie was good.
Yeah, everything really great on camera.
Yeah, everything goes up a couple octaves at the end. So I've been doing the quiet.
I liked it.
Yeah, I was surprised.
That was really fun.
I know, people have no idea just how goddamn insulting they are with all their compliments.
This is great.
Right. So I've been after now I'm into the hundreds of people going, it was really good.
I laughed.
Right. So after several thousand of those.
This is absolutely spectacular.
I've seen the lay of the land, which is. Let's see. You rattled the can. You got some money together. You decided it was time for you to star in an independent film. What's going on in people's minds? I mean, what are they picturing? Especially if somebody I knew came up to me and said, "Hey, I made my own movie." You know, it's like, oh, look, we all have that. We all have that, you know, when Andy Dick rolls in here and says, "I shot my own movie. It's awesome. I use my own money." It's like, yeah. So for me, because I don't want that, it's important to me that people see the movie before I then go on their show so they can be, so they can gush into the microphone.
Right, and you asked Dr. Drew to watch The Hammer.
I got hold of Dr. Drew the day before yesterday because I knew Dr. Drew and I knew he would not watch it. And I said, I will, get you. He was, by the way, invited to the showing we had in L.A. 9 months ago and did not attend or could not attend. But I got him. I said, I'm going to get you the DVD on Wednesday so you have a couple days to watch it. And he said, no, I'll be in on Thursday and I'll watch it. And I said, Jay, make sure and get him the CD. And I said, Drew, or the DVD, and make sure and watch it. Of course, he had not watched it. So he had not seen the movie, so all there was left to do was watch his show, the Celebrity Rehab Wrap-Up Show, with the sound down and eat pretzels during the entire time I was talking about the movie.
Passive-aggressive.
Yeah, what an a-hole. I go in there once every 2.5 years to plug a movie's eating pretzels and tuned out. Eventually, he agreed to shut the TV set off so that he could at least swing his chair over in my direction.
Well, he was
listen.
Dialed in when he was in here. At least you could say that.
Yes, he was.
It was great.
He'd certainly seen his show.
How late did you stay?
I just stayed for the first hour and a little bit of change and then hustled home to see if I could squeeze in 4 hours sleep. All right.
Well, if it makes you feel any better, I watched the Celebrity Rehab Reunion show and I ate pretzels.
Mm.
I don't know if you want to keep talking about it, but line 5 has a question that I am also curious about.
Okay, let's talk to Ed. Ed.
Hey, how you guys doing? Good morning.
Good. What's happening, Ed?
Hey, first off, real quick, I'd like to offer Teresa my services. I have a couple connections. I might be able to work a deal with her DJ for her wedding. It's a guy you may have heard of, and you know, I'd be proud to say that he DJed my wedding. Teresa, how would you like to have the Grease Man DJ your wedding?
Wow. I mean, nothing says class.
Hey, before we hear a little moaning, moaning, how about a little smacky, smacky?
Wow, how do you know the Grease Man?
I was working the drive-thru at the Taco Bell on a wild Tuesday night. I rolled through. I recognized him. I said, is this who I think it is? He said, absolutely.
Oh, thanks. That's a very kind offer.
Come on. I'm going to make myself a bone-dry martini when I get home with a schmacky-schmacky. Yes, one of the greats, the legendary DJ, the Grease Man. Ed, what did you have to say?
No, seriously, I wanted to know. It was never really mentioned outright what happened, but I want to know why you and Anderson didn't get along. I'd actually like to have Brian chime in and see if he has a different perspective on it than you do.
Drunk! I'm drunk.
Well, here's what happened. when I entered Loveline, there was there was an alternative radio vibe in the air, which is anti the man.
Right.
And the man is essentially the boss. So there was a bunch of $6 an hour people that had been running around there. When I said things like, hey, how about you get me a coffee? They're like, hey, how about you get it yourself, dude? You know, there was a lot of that going on. And most everyone over there was incompetent for the most part. It was a sort of disaster of a place to work. I had a producer who didn't much like me. She liked Ricky Rackman. She would do things, she would do awesome things like, Ricky Rackman would complain to the program director that Drew and I were sneaking off and having secret conversations and secret meetings behind his back. And I would look at the program director and go, I don't know what you're talking about. I haven't talked to Drew outside of the studio in 6 months. We've never gone into the room and closed the door. This is just paranoia. I haven't talked to Drew about any secret conversations, especially here, at the station. And then the program director would look at producer Ann and go, is that true, Ann? And she'd go, yes, it is. So there was a lot of that sort of retardation. And by the way, I just wanted to strangle her and the program director and everyone else over there. So there was a lot of people doing their job horribly who had been doing their job horribly for years before I got there. It was just, that's the way it was. The producer didn't like me because I was new. We had a phone screener named Tara, but she got really PO'd because I called her Tara one time, and she'd give me these long-winded discussions about, it's not Tara, it's Tara, okay? And I'd say, hey, I don't give an F. Go get me my effing coffee. Because my feeling was, as you guys have seen, the way I react, which is, we have a dump button guy now. His name is Ryan. He's a perfectly nice guy. I enjoy Ryan quite a bit. He's good-natured, and he knows where he stands.
He's gay!
We have, and I guess if you would talk to Ryan, he would probably say that I'm a friendly, affable guy, or at least I'm not a mean guy. Maybe we could get him to chime in.
No!
Now, if you would talk to the other guys who worked the dump button on this show previous to Ryan, they would say I'm a maniacal a-hole. Why? Well, because they wanted to confront me in the hallway a time or two and settle my hash. I am crazy, but I don't like $9 an hour guy settling my hash in the hallway during the commercial breaks.
I remember
when I'm
that guy
trying to do something. Yeah. And
I like Lance.
I will not come up and pick on anybody. But if you want to come and pick a fight, you have definitely found the right place when it comes to work. Now, if Jack Silver wants to drag a Grecian formula down the hall and has a bone to pick with me, I'm all ears because Jack is, well, I don't consider the man my boss. Certainly, when he talks, I am obliged to listen.
And he's a boss.
He's a boss, and he will listen when I talk as well. But when Jack's assistant, who's getting $8 an hour, comes down the hall and wants to give me an earful, I'm not listening to that person. Well, Loveline was chocked filled with that, and I just came in, and I wouldn't take it. Like, I'd say, hey, I said yesterday that you needed to bring the coffee in before the mics heated up, and I don't think that's too tall an order. And they'd go like, wow, what's up your ass, dude? and they'd walk out of the room.
No pecking order in the chicken coop.
Right. And I also had certain ideas about certain things that needed to go on over there that never did go on. For instance, we had chairs that squeaked and were broken and would just squeak and rattle and whatever, and we couldn't get them replaced, and I eventually threw a fit, and we needed a security guard because we were having death threats, and we never got a security guard, so eventually I threatened not to come in, and we got a security guard, and we were working in a place where they were constructing a movie theater around it, and when I say around it, I mean on top of it, and I said,
like
we need...
Like a tree grows around a rope.
Yes, yeah. Yes, and I said, we need to move this to the operations, to the main operations, and that didn't happen for 2 years until I eventually refused to come in. And there was a whole bunch of stuff that I kind of, I became sort of the troublemaker because I was the one who said, and I'm not Mr. Professional, I was just like, look, call me crazy, but I don't think interns should be giving crap to the stars of the show.
No, there's a chain of command.
Explain,
it has to be
explain who Anderson is.
Anderson is the engineer.
Yeah, engineer slash board op. He does it all.
He showed up and came up after our last guy. He's a lovable, surly guy who had a chip on his shoulder. And Anderson would do things like, he used to think it was funny to like record conversations Drew and I might be having about a guest during the commercial breaks and then replay them when the guest came back in.
He is the best drop man I've ever heard. He's the best.
He used to do things like, one time we had a couple of hot twins in. And we said, like, they're hot Playboy twins or something. And we said, who are you guys dating? And they're like, well, we're dating Gunnar Nelson. I was like, Nelson? Yeah. I was like, from the 80s, the band, Nelson, those has-beens? What are you dating those losers for? You get some real rock stars. Of course, literally 2 days later, Nelson came in studio, and Anderson decided it'd be funny to play the entire exchange. They do things like that over there.
They're has a huge problem with authority. He hates anyone in a position of authority.
You right. Were in on the joke. It was on you.
Yes, and he was very passive-aggressive, and he hated authority, and he would do that crap with me, and I'd be like, hey, monkey, focus on pushing the buttons before I fire your ass.
You threatened to have him replaced with a plastic snowman on the air.
Yes, I told him I will have your ass replaced by a plastic snowman, and
he's
he will do a better
there.
Job than you. And,
he's a very close friend of mine, so I don't think he minds.
Now, don't you do
this.
A radio show with
yes,
him?
Yes, I see him once a week, and we talk lots and lots about this.
It was a great environment. The greatest time ever, just to give you a little glimpse of how great it was in the early days. Producer Ann loved Ricky Rackman, wasn't a fan of mine. Again, the man had star quality, so says Kevin Weatherly, the program director.
Well, he sells a great car.
He sells a great Jetta.
Heck of a job.
Nobody moves Jettas like Rackman. And I had to sit there, basically, and do battle with producer Ann, who'd hitched her team to Ricky Rackman. And we had a dilemma. Ricky Rackman, as the story goes, and I've said it before, but I'll bore you again, dropped out of Loveline, the television show, at the last moment. Ricky Rackman and Dr. Drew were going to host Loveline on MTV. And at the last second, Ricky's people said, we need more money. And they said, we're not going to pay it to you. And they went into a scramble. And they said to Dr. Drew, who do you think could replace Ricky Rackman? And I wasn't doing the radio show. I was doing my character on the morning
Burcham.
Show, and he said, maybe the guy who plays Mr. Burcham could do it. And the next thing you know, I did an audition. Well, actually, it was pretty funny because they said, how about you audition to do Loveline? And the first thing out of my mouth is, why don't you get Mark DiCarlo to do it? Because Mark DiCarlo,
I remember that guy,
who did Lovers, Dating, Heartbreak. What
Something.
Was that stupid show?
Studs,
yes. It was killed by AIDS, basically, is what happened to Studs.
AIDS but killed Studs?
I said, why don't you get Mark DiCarlo to do it? I was sort of half kidding. I went in and did a little audition with Dr. Drew, walked out of the studio, opened the door, literally shaft, you know, big dark soundstage, opened the door, shaft of light comes through it. There's a figure, a shadowy figure standing in the doorway that I literally bump into, and who is it? Mark DiCarlo. He's heading in for the next audition. But anyway, now I get the gig. But we don't want to tell Ricky Rackman that I got the gig, because then a month later, I get on Loveline, the radio show. So now me and Dr. Drew, who have our own show coming up called Loveline, wasn't even on MTV back then. It's not on yet. We've not started.
Fox or ABC or something?
It's going to be syndicated. We've not started shooting it yet. But our partner is in the room, and it's going to be weird if he finds out. He's already feeling threatened enough. It's going to feel weird if he finds out that we're doing a TV show and that he's here. And plus, he could probably read the writing on the wall at that point. How long before we don't need him in this studio?
Right.
So he's feeling strange and insecure. Producer Ann is a fan of his because he's been around for 3 years and I'm new. Drew and I have a little secret to keep. We're like lovers that are cheating. The show's not going to be out yet. The show's a few months off, and that's a good place to break, because I'll tell you what happened when we came back. It was great radio, and just another great example of how effed up that place was. Anderson didn't like authority. I was authority. Doesn't like authority. And is a film critic, by the way, or at least a film major and a film critic. And one of the greatest compliments, basically, I've ever been paid is that he really enjoyed my movie, which is, I knew was very difficult.
And did he use the high voice?
For him to admit. No, he doesn't have
he used
one of those.
The opposite, the low voice, which is the begrudging voice. Like, I really liked your movie.
Yes.
You know, he begrudgingly admitted.
Disappointment. All right, your calls and the conclusion to the Loveline melee that broke out next.
Adam's on the phone.
It's the Adam Carolla Show.
You're listening to Free 2 HD.
That's right. Y'all already locked on 97.1 Free 2 HD.
Face it. You love crank yankers. Well, here's another one on 97.1 Free 2 HD.
Hello, Hector speaking.
My name is Spoonie.
Spoonie?
I bought some shoes from your store the other day.
Okay.
And when I went to put them on, there was a note inside that said my toes looked like Tootsie Rolls.
Your toes, what?
Yes, I am insulted. Not only insulted, I'm hurt.
Okay, do you remember who helped you out?
No.
And you bought it out of this location?
Yes, and my son bought a pair of shoes out of there the other day, too. And they said that he had a note in his shoes that said his toes look like milk duds.
Okay, I you know what, sir? I mean, I really apologize for that, but I don't...
No, wait a minute. Do Tootsie Rolls have bunions? Because my toes do. And that's some whack-ass crap right there.
Can you describe the person that was helping you?
Asian. Male.
Okay.
I woke up the other day, my son was trying to chew on my toes like they was Tootsie Roll because of that letter.
Okay, Spoon, do you have a contact number where we could reach
yes.
you?
Yes. No,
okay.
Hold on. This affected my whole family.
Okay, we're definitely going to take a look into this, okay?
All the loves.
Okay.
And as I left, you know what the guy said?
What did he say?
He said, bye-bye, little Tootsie Roll foot boy. And started laughing. Like,
okay.
My toes really look like Tootsie Rolls.
Okay.
You think that's funny?
No, I don't think that's funny. Like I said, we're going to take a look into it.
You laughing.
No, I'm not laughing.
You
sir.
Ever had a note in your shoe that said your toes look like Tootsie Rolls and milk duds?
I don't know how that's relevant to the situation.
Well, you know how relevant it is? When I plant my toes in your ass, they won't feel like no Tootsie Rolls.
Oh, okay.
Hey, everybody, this is Jeff Ross, and you're listening to 97.1 Free 2 HD, the FM talk station, where the FM stands for Fred McMurray.
Right now on the Adam Carolla Show, a Friday morning pep talk with program director Jack Silver.
I got five on it, peeps! On today's show, we got comedian Dave Attell, the founder of Girls Gone Wild, Joe Francis, from Ease the Soup, Joel McHale, a chance for you to win tickets to see the Ace Man shake his ass on Dancing with the Stars, and we'll talk to the baby whisperer from Good Morning America, Dr. Karp. So, he's an expert on whispering to little kids, huh? Well, let me ask him this. What's the best way to tell a kid
Don't press charges.
Thank you, Jack. Phone number is 866-901-ADAM. This is the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, is everyone sitting down? I was in the middle of complaining about something, but I was taking a little walk down memory lane because I went and did Loveline for the first time in 2.5 years last night. Had a good time, uneventful. Watched Dr. Drew eat pretzels and watch himself on a plasma television for the first hour and not watch my movie. Other than that, it was fine. I was... talking about the hostile, passive-aggressive environment that was Loveline while I was there. And I think I'm being fair. Here's how I am, for the most part. You treat me right. You treat me with respect. You do your job, and everything is copacetic, and everything is cool. You shoot some attitude my way, and we're done. Immediately. We're immediately done. And I had that with quite a few folks over there at Loveline. Actually, almost everyone. So producer Ann, now to get back to the story, Dr. Drew and I were going to do Loveline, the TV show. Ricky Rackman had passed on it, although the three of us were all together doing Loveline, the radio show. And Drew and I did not want Ricky to find out that I was doing it, because we thought it would cause some friction in the studio. Well, what happened? This is just perfect vintage Loveline stuff. Somebody who was in the audience of a test show faxed us. And producer Ann went and got the fax. And producer Ann read a fax that said, hey, did you know that they did Loveline the TV show? And did you know that Adam and Drew were the hosts and Ricky Rackman was not the host? And she went and ripped that fax off, and then she called Ricky over during the show, during a commercial. She said, Ricky, look at this. And he said, what? They're doing a TV show? And she said, yes. Then she threw it away. Then we proceeded to come back and sit down and do the radio show. And then Ricky queried, hey, what'd you guys do last weekend? And we were like, I don't know, a little this, a little that. Oh, nothing? You guys didn't get together at all? We may have seen each other. Why? You didn't do a TV show together called Loveline? Thanks, Ann. Nice job, baby. Thanks for stabbing me in the back.
That gave me a stomachache just thinking about
it. Great producing. Great producing.
What's amazing is that the passive aggression even somehow extended itself to some anonymous member of the audience who felt the need to fax in.
Yes. So that was basically how it worked over there. Now, eventually they got rid of Ricky Rackman and sort of learned to tolerate me. But
spent 10 years
would never call,
after that.
Would never call her a fan. I would never call anyone who I worked with over
how
there
could you
a
be
fan.
Creative in that kind of atmosphere?
It was easy and no one was in the room. Once in a while you'd look through the glass and it was much like looking through the glass. If you ever go to an aquarium and you see those big, giant sea bass just swimming
right.
in a circle, you know, the expression on their face.
Yeah.
That would be the expression on everyone's face. And then every once in a while I'd hear in my ear, go to calls. But that'd be in the middle, that'd be in the middle of one of my rants. And I was told by the program director to shut up and take more phone calls for, well, 11 years.
Oh.
Thank God I never listened. All right. Let's talk to Kathy from Atlanta. Kathy?
Hi.
How say you, sweet pea?
Great, great. Oh, I'm so glad you took my call. This is great. I've been wanting to call in for so long, but I've always been really nervous to do so. And now that the How Say You segment started, it's... You know, why not?
So, sure, why not?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite parts of the show now because I just like listening to people call in and random topics.
Nice to talk to you.
Did you have anything to say other than hi?
Not really.
Are you
I listen to you guys like for 2 years. I work in data entry, so I listen to podcasts all day long. And you guys, I listen to Loveline. And in fact, you're talking about your... You're talking about the security guard you finally got. I loved whenever he would fall asleep on the job and you guys would go out there with a microphone.
Yeah,
and, he got fired.
Record and snore.
He had sleep apnea. He was a heavy set man, as many security guards are, and he would fall asleep on the sofa And every time he'd fall asleep on the sofa, he would saw a log so loud that I could hear him through the studio door. And so I told Anderson to get me a 30-foot mic cord, and I hooked it up to my mic, and I dragged it out down the hall and placed it by his mouth while he was sleeping. It was scary because he's a big guy with pepper spray. I didn't want him to wake up in the middle of that, but evidently somebody heard him. It was a two-hour show. He was a security guard. He only had to stay awake from 10 to midnight every night. But he thought he's going to catch some Z's. I felt bad that the guy got fired because of it. But on the other hand, if you're going to fall, here's my advice. I don't blame a man for catching a couple winks while he's on the clock. But the apnea-like snoring, the super loud, I'm advertising to everyone in the building, I'm asleep while they're working. Snoring, probably not a great plan.
I don't think that was the right career for him.
Maybe not. All right. Hey, Kathy?
Yeah.
Thank you, sweetie Petey.
Oh, yeah. Thank y'all. I just love you so much. And Teresa, I mean, I love the new setup. You know, it's just the three of you guys and everything. Bob, Brian, I enjoyed being insulted by you with your drops. I appreciate that.
Shut up and take more phone calls.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks, Kathy. All right. And let's talk to Dave. Dave?
Yeah?
You want to discuss Windy City Heat?
Yeah. So I don't know if you remember, you did the movie Monday a while ago, and you mentioned you did a movie called Windy City Heat. So
yes.
I threw it on my Netflix. Anyways, just watched it a couple days ago. Thought it was hilarious. Hard to believe that this Perry guy was that gullible.
Windy City Heat is a movie that we produced, meaning me and Jimmy and our company. I had a limited role in it and a limited part in it. Lots of cameos and a very different movie formatically, but more laughs in that movie than just about any movie I've seen over the last 10 years.
The main character is a guy, a real guy who doesn't really understand what's going on around him.
The movie is about a guy who thinks he's going to star in a Bruce Willis type action movie, but as it turns out, he's starring in a movie about the making of that movie, and the joke is on him. Every single person in the movie is an actor. His assistant's an actor. The director is not only the director, Bobcat Goldthwait, of the movie, but he's also playing the part of the director. Craft service, every single cameo, it's a very interesting sort of experiment. He thinks he's doing essentially Die Hard 5, and he's doing a movie that's making fun of him, and he 100% bought into it all the way through. Yes, sorry, Dave.
Oh, yeah. So, so when you're watching an episode of, like, Punk, like, one of the best parts is when they actually, you know, let the people know, hey, it's a big joke.
I was just wondering that.
I was a little disappointed that they didn't do that in the movie, and I'm kind of curious how this guy reacted, because he seemed very emotionally unstable. So, like,
yes.
Did he, like, jump off a bridge or something? Or, like, how did he...
He lives in a sort of world that's somewhere between reality and fantasy. And, you know, it's one of these things where people felt bad for him. Like, hey, you're taking advantage of the guy. He made $50,000 and would have never been in a movie.
How did you find
ironically,
this guy?
I never found him. He was found. He was a comedian. And he was found by my friends and guys I work with many, many years ago. This relationship had been going on for 10 years before we finally made Windy City Heat. So, and there's talks to do a part two with Johnny Knoxville, and that's about all I know. But, Dave.
Yeah.
How funny is that goddamn movie?
Oh, it's hilarious. Yeah. But, like, you're right. You do feel bad for the guy just because they pick on him so much.
But if you knew what an a-hole he was, you wouldn't, number one. And number two, it's a little, I wouldn't quite call it a cult classic, but it's getting there.
Yeah, and I know what Dave means. It's kind of satisfying to see that moment where the person realizes that this is all a joke.
Right.
I don't think that moment has ever happened because he was in here.
Right.
And he still seemed to think he was a movie star.
Tony?
Yeah, hey.
How say you, my brother?
Hey, Brian, you guys are awesome.
Thanks.
Shut up and take more phone calls. Mm-hmm.
Out on the East Coast, we're not really getting much promotion for The Hammer. I was wondering, other than your radio, what you've really done in...
You're out in Connecticut?
Yep, Hartford.
How long does it take you to get to New York City?
I don't know, about an 2 hours.
Sadly, that's the closest place. It's at Times Square in New York City that you can get the movie now. I'll explain how it works very quickly. I've done it before, but in radio, you have to repeat yourself because people listen at different times. You do a limited release. As a matter of fact, Bald Brian, I'm going to put you on a mission because I often use the movie Sideways, which is not terribly different in our movie in sort of tone and texture, as an example. Sideways originally gets, and I'll screw up these numbers, but you'll get the gist. Sideways originally gets released in like three theaters or three cities, you know, or I don't know how many screens. They call them screens.
They call these call it a platform release.
Yeah, okay. New York, Chicago, L.A. Then they see how it does. How did it do? And if it did pretty well that week, well, then maybe the next week or the week after that, they'll open it in 12 or 18 screens. Now they'll open it up to, you know, Boston and San Francisco. And they'll try to think of cities that that movie might play well in bigger cities. And it's probably not going to get to Idaho in the first whatever. But if it plays well, then it opens in 36 screens. And the next week it'll jump up to 111 screens. And by the time Sideways got to the end, it was on like 1,300 screens. All built on word of mouth,
yeah.
All built on advertisement once they figured out the movie was actually hit and people enjoyed it, and all built on a sort of momentum, almost like a franchise. You open the one stand, there's a line around the block, so you go, oh, I'll open Joe's Red Hots number 2 down the street, and then that one gets busy, so you go, how about I open one in Chicago?
Sort of a classic formula. You get it into some film festivals, you get some good reviews, people go to see it in the little theaters that it's in.
Right.
You get the big numbers per screen average, and then people want to put it in their
It's theaters. All about per screen average. If your movie is on 2,500 screens and it made $5 million this weekend, well, that might sound all right, but your per screen average is not great. Because you have to divide that $5 million into the 2,500 screens it's in versus being on 900 screens and making $5 million per screen average. So we release The Hammer. The Hammer gets released in Seattle and in Portland and Los Angeles, Chicago and so on and so forth, about 10 cities and on maybe 20, 25 screens, three, four screens each city. If the per screen average is good, then the next week it expands, and eventually, long after I'm dead, it gets to Hartford, where Tony is calling from.
Okay.
That's how it goes. So,
I got it.
So here's the problem. If you're in a smallish city, and it will get to Boston, and it will get to Philadelphia, and it will get to Chicago, and it probably will get to a place like Hartford, Connecticut, but you're probably going to have to wait a few weeks. And the caveat is, my fans need to go out and see this movie. Otherwise, it will never expand.
Right.
Yes.
Real quick, Sideways opened on 4 screens in October 2004 and made $200,000 in its first weekend.
By the way, I was there because I went and saw Sideways opening night in New York. And the reason I saw it...
You saw it on one of 4 screens?
Yeah. And the reason I saw it was because I had read a review and it was so glowing. I thought, I got to see this. And no one had heard of it.
The next week, it had 16 screens.
4 screens, yep. First weekend.
200 grand. Next week, it had 16 screens and then 66, 144. By the time it sort of reached critical mass, it was on about 1,700 screens.
Well, there you
That's
go.
That's around the time the Oscar nominations and everything.
Yeah.
Right. So a good example of a little movie with a modest cast and modest budget that was a funny comedy that somehow captured people's imaginations or spoke to people. I could understand seeing that movie and being an executive and saying, well, this is certainly no blockbuster. It's no Jim Carrey movie, but we'll test it out. And it's nice. It feels good. It feels right in this day and age of sort of big corporate America and the man and being hit over the head with American Idol and Dancing with the Stars and all that other junk. This little piece of artistic endeavor, word of mouth, couple of nice reviews. It's really word on the street. It's people like Teresa Strasser reading a nice review, going in and seeing the movie, leaving the theater and saying to two of her friends, hey, you ought to check this out. It's a good movie. Those two friends see the movie. They tell two more of their friends. The next thing you know, you have a hit on your hands. That's what we're hoping for with The Hammer.
Speaking of sleeper hits, did everyone compare your movie to The Full Monty? Have you heard that yet?
I've not heard it compared to it, but of course I know The Full Monty.
It's the same kind of formula, the Rocky formula, and reminds me a lot of the movie in sort of tone and independent spirit. And that movie did really well. It started off with like $100,000 on its first weekend and ended up making like $45 million.
The logical conclusion to that is The Hammer, the musical.
From your mouth to God's ears, baby girl. All right, quick break. When we come back, Dr. Harvey Karp. The happiest toddler on the block. He is the toddler whisperer. I have many questions for him about my toddlers, and we'll talk to him. And if you have questions for him, 866-901-M, you can ask yourself. We'll be back with him next.
1-2-1-2-1-2, holler at me. I'm Tracy Morgan, and you're listening to The Adam Carolla Show. You heard? Call Adam now. 866-901-ADAM!
The Adam Carolla Show.
This is 97.1 Free HD2, your station for The Adam Carolla Show, 24-7, 365, 6,492,005. There's just a lot of Carolla. Now, here's another great Crank Yankers episode on 97.1 Free 2 HD.
Hello?
Uh-huh. I'm calling about the ad that's in the newspaper.
Hi, who's this?
My name's Jolene.
Hi, Jolene. Why are you calling?
Because of the ad that is in the newspaper.
Oh, you're calling about the ad.
Yes.
Which ad are you calling about?
The receptionist position.
Oh. Is this about the ad?
Is your mom or dad there, or?
Yeah, they're here.
Okay. Can I speak with one of them, please?
Oh, so you're calling about the ad.
Yes.
The ad in the newspaper.
Yes.
It was in there, huh?
May I speak with your mom or dad?
Which newspaper ad are you calling about?
The receptionist ad.
Okay, so you're calling about the ad in the newspaper.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. You read it?
Yeah.
And now you're calling about it?
Yes.
Perfect. So what can I do for you?
Can you tell me a little bit about the job?
Which job?
Okay, never mind. So I can't talk to your mom or dad?
Absolutely. Who did you want to talk to?
Your mom, please.
Or what about my dad?
That would be fine, too.
Hold on.
Hello?
Hello?
Are you calling about the ad?
Yes, I am.
In the newspaper?
Okay, thank you for your time. Bye-bye.
Wait. Thank you for so much for calling about the ad.
Hi, I'm Mary Lynn Rice Tubb, and you're listening to 97.1 Free 2 HD, the FM talk station.
It's the Adam Carolla Show. Listen all week to win $500, courtesy of No Country for Old Men. When a man stumbles on a pickup truck loaded with $2 million, his decision to take the money sets off a chain reaction of violence. It's out now on DVD and Blu-ray, starring Tommy Lee Jones, Javier Bardem, and Josh Brolin. Now back to the Adam Carolla Show.
Well, Dr. Harvey Karp in studio. The happiest toddler on the block is the name of his book, DVD, series, and is it fair to call the book DVD series?
Yeah, it's a book and a DVD.
And I was told that you were sort of the toddler whisperer, that you could get what you needed them to do.
Well, you know, it's a little bit like mental jujitsu. If you know how to approach them, they're putty in your hands, Adam, putty in your hands.
Well, I have a 20-month-old son who is built like a pony keg, but yet does not like eating. Quite often, especially dinner time, a lot of spitting out of the mouth, a lot of defiance and crying and that kind of stuff. What we end up doing is breaking down and giving him Golden Graham cereal.
That's all he likes.
That's what he wants. But that little punk won't eat macaroni and cheese or hot dogs or any of the things that I've labeled as nummy.
Yeah, the food pyramid for you.
Right,
yeah.
Mac and cheese and then held up by a log cabin of wieners. So when you go to put it in, he does it, and then eventually you shove it in his mouth, and then he spits it back out. Yeah. How would you address that with a 20-month-old?
Well, you got to wear an apron.
Yes.
So it doesn't get...
thank God we have a dog who's just essentially becomes a mop underneath the kid who spits everything out. But how do you address a situation like that?
You know, there are a couple of things. One is you have to know that there are battles you can win and battles you can't win.
Mm-hmm.
And to make an 18-month-old eat something you want them to eat, you just don't have that leverage. You can keep them from eating something. So in other words,
right.
You can keep them from eating candy.
Right.
But you just don't let them have it. But if you put broccoli in front of him, even if you get it in his mouth, he's going to spit it out. Or he might. You know, it's his choice. Some kids will eat it, but
they'll decide they don't. But even if it's something... Now, here's the strange thing about him. It's something that he will enjoy at some times and then not others. I mean, I understand Brussels sprouts,
mm-hmm.
but mac and cheese, come on, buddy.
So it's not that he doesn't like mac and cheese. It's that he doesn't like being fed mac and cheese at dinner time.
Yeah, well, you know, 18 months, 20 months, they're in that range, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it's a very, I want it my way age. You know, they mm-hmm. don't like sometimes they don't like it if the peas touch the carrots.
Right.
Or they want to put all the toy horses in one pile and the
right.
toy trucks in another pile and don't let those two piles touch. So they get very picky about how they want things.
Are they coming online? Are they realizing that they're individuals? Is that what's going on? From a psychodynamic standpoint, what is the change that is taking place in their brains, and how do I stop it?
Well, you know, the way I look at toddlers is they're kind of like cavemen.
Mm-hmm.
And a 20-month-old is totally Neanderthal.
So you guys should totally relate. I don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You just drool with them, you know. I mean, that's why they're shoving food in their mouths, and they spit and scratch, and they pee anywhere they want.
They
you know,
do stuff to the dog sometimes.
Yes. I have a daughter that likes to poke my dog Molly right where the sun doesn't shine.
Yeah.
Separate story. But the point is how then would you deal with the defiant young lad who is not eating his mac and cheese?
A couple of things you can do. Number one, back off a little bit. You know, mm-hmm. there's, like you said, there are times he's going to take it and times he won't. And when he doesn't want it, don't try to get into a battle over it. But if you have a child who's really only eating the honey grams or something like that, and you can never get any other food, you might walk away from the deal sometimes.
Yes.
Here's the food. You have to eat. You have to touch this pea to your tongue, and then you can have your honey grams. And you offer it a couple of times, and if your child won't do it, then you say, no problem, see you later.
I had the same deal with my wife for many years. Touch the pea to the tongue,
right.
and you get your bowl of cereal. But now
I am just a pediatrician.
Can I ask...
Oh, my God, it's exciting.
Can I ask this, Dr. Harvey Karp? I've basically said, look, if he's hungry... He's got a cut-up hot dog, mac and cheese, and a bunch of crackers and other nummy things in front of him. If he's truly hungry, he'll eat. He'll exactly. not just walk away. Is that true?
Yeah, it's totally true. I mean, he may walk away once or twice, but it's not going to happen.
But eventually he's going to come back and eat.
Right. Unless you then give him a bottle of milk to say, all right, at least he got his milk. Because then some kids will just drink the milk and you're never going to get
the
food.
So you shouldn't sort of satiate the child with an alternative food when he's not eating what he should eat.
Yeah, if you always do that, then he'll figure out that all he has to do
very
is outlast.
Quickly.
Right. Yeah.
Hold out for a couple of beats, get the mm-hmm. golden grams,
mm-hmm.
and he's in Fat City. All right, hang on a second. Dr. Harvey Karp is in studio. He is the author of The Happiest Toddler on the Block. And by the way, it is in stores now. You can go to his website,
thehappiestbaby.com.
That's it.
That's where you go. We have a couple of questions for you, and I have a few more concerning my own. So we'll take a quick break. Be back with Dr. Karp next.
Now, here's another Adam Carolla comedy clip from Alonzo Bodden.
Shopping for women is the toughest experience a man will ever have because we do not understand your stuff, okay? We don't understand your clothes because, first of all, women don't buy clothes. Too easy to buy clothes. No, women have to buy outfits. For every occasion, a woman has an outfit, okay? And there's some kind of secret competition going on that if two women show up at the same time, in the same place, in the same outfit, there's going to be trouble. See, that doesn't apply to men. If we show up dressed the same, we figure we got it right. So we try to buy you clothes, ladies, but you have this size thing going on, all right? And the size is just a number. We don't understand the number. We don't know how the number works. Men's clothes, simple. Measure your waist. That's your size. With women, you get some arbitrary number. The only thing we know about the number is we better not get the number too big.
More Adam Carolla coming your way next on 97.1 32 HD, SoCal's high-definition FM talk station.
I'm Joel McHale from Ease the Soup, and you're listening to 97.1 32 HD, the FM talk station, where FM stands for Frequency Modulation Whore.
It's the Adam Carolla Show. In studio this morning, the insomniac, Dave Attell.
I declare the tsunami's now funny, or as I call it, God's money shot.
The Soup's Joel McHale.
I'm a hermaphrodite.
You can win tickets to see Adam dance Monday night on Dancing with the Stars.
You will be dancing in front of a couple 20 million people.
I'll be expressing myself through the majesty of dance.
And we'll talk to the recently unincarcerated Joe Francis.
Rock and roll, right on. Show us your tits.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news.
I don't go number two.
Powered by MSN.com. Have you been to MSN today? To talk to the Ace Man, call 866-901-ADAM. And stream the Adam Carolla Show at AdamCarolla.com. Just click on Listen Live.
Good news for you. I'm still an American. Bad news is, I love dudes.
And now, Adam Carolla.
Well, we have the kitty whisperer, Dr. Harvey Karp, in studio. The Happiest Toddler on the Block is the name of his DVD and book series. TheHappiestBaby.com is where you go for more information. Now, we were talking off the air about how to immediately calm, soothe, or get your little munchkin to quit crying. I told you to save the technique. Tell it to me on the air. So now I'm curious because my kids will pitch a fit, and I would like to instantly calm them. How do I do that?
Well, the calming thing I was talking about is actually the happiest baby on the block. So that's the first 3 to 4 months of life. It turns out that, and that's a different book and a DVD, but it turns out that babies are born with an off switch for crying called the calming reflex.
Mm-hmm.
And when you know how to turn that on, and the way you turn it on is by imitating the experience they have in the uterus, the sound, the movement, swaddling them really snugly. When you do that exactly right, you can calm even colicky babies in minutes or seconds.
What is the exact technique? Because thus far, I've been using a dart dipped in Curare.
Yeah, that and the duct tape technique you mentioned earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it feels you swaddle.
Feels a slight sting on his neck, and that's the last thing he remembers.
Yeah, remember, they learn from what you do, so be careful.
So you swaddle them. Now, so the kid's crying. Let's say I have a four-month-old.
Yeah.
And the kid's spinning out.
Yeah.
And I have to recreate the womb.
Right. So the fussiest period is the first 3 months of life. So mm-hmm. right from the beginning, there are five steps to calming a fussy baby. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is, they're called the five S's, swaddling, the side or stomach position, shushing, swinging, and sucking. So the first mm-hmm. step is you wrap them up with their arms down. Even if they fight you,
mm-hmm.
that's okay. That's the first step because you've got to keep them from flailing around.
Yeah,
number one.
In the womb, their arms are down. They're not flailing about. You're recreating that womb experience.
That's exactly what you're doing. And when you do that the right way, you flip the switch that turns on the calming reflex. So, for example, sound. In the uterus, it's louder than a vacuum. It's twice as loud as a vacuum cleaner.
Really? Jesus.
Sound. So what's it like when you bring them home?
Impending. By the way, I'd be thinking, my God, abortion. I'm being aborted. I'm hearing a shop vac. This is horrific. That's got to be a tough way to go through life.
Very self-aware.
Well, I'm just saying, hearing a vacuum coming up the old turnpike doesn't sound like a great plan when you're a kid. But it is pulsating and loud.
That's
down
exactly
there
what it
is. Inside of the uterus.
Yeah, I guess that's why people like to sleep to white noise.
Exactly. Or the sound of the ocean is calming, or the sound mm-hmm. of the wind, or people fall asleep in trains, rickety sound.
Basically, the plan is a kid, when it's in the uterus, is not spazzing out. The kid is not flailing their arms about. They're not crying. They're not doing it. They're very calm. They have to be very calm in the uterus.
They're in a trance.
Right.
They're
so
hypnotized.
You have to get them into that trance
right.
by recreating their former home.
That's right. And you know what? Anyone who's pregnant will tell you that the fetus, the unborn baby, gets most active when you go to sleep at night. mm-hmm. when you stop the movement of the day.
Uh-huh.
And I've had people kind of bop their belly back and forth like a tortilla
right.
to kind of put the fetus back to sleep, because that rhythmic movement, that mm-hmm. rhythmic sound, that being held flips the
switch.
This
is why babies are good in a car.
You bet. That's exactly why. Or in a swing. Or when you play a vacuum cleaner. You know, what's weird is people say don't overstimulate the baby, mm-hmm. but to calm a baby down, turn on a hairdryer.
Right.
What sense does that make? Until you understand that what you're doing is imitating the uterus.
It's the shushing.
It's the shushing.
Do they have a device that does this? I know they have white noise, and I know they have ocean yeah. sounds, but is there something that, you know, scientifically, physically recreates that uteral sound that could be put in a kid's room? And if not, let's get on it, brother.
Well, you've got the CD right in front of you. That soothing sound CD has the sound of the uterus and has some other sounds so that you can play that. As a matter of fact, if you want your baby to, and this works for toddlers well too, you want your mm-hmm. baby to sleep
that's
an
what
extra
mine sounds like right
hour
now.
Or two.
Ticking, yes. Yeah. Play that. Play the CD.
You play the CD
mm-hmm.
All night long, about the level of a shower. And with a baby, if you do it with a baby, you swaddle them and you play the CD with the womb sounds, babies will sleep an extra 1 to 2 hours almost immediately.
Somebody has a question about an autistic child that hits other kids. Mm-hmm. You want to try that one?
Sure.
Oh, I'm so curious what you think about the latest, that case involving vaccines and
sure.
autism.
Jennifer,
sure.
Dr. Harvey Karp in studio, author of The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Yeah, and I want to ask about the vaccines versus the autism as well. So, Jennifer, you have an autistic child.
Yes, I do. Good morning, everybody.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi. Yes, my son, he's 5 years old. He has autism, but he has the mind of a 3-year-old. He goes to school, and I got a note from the teacher that he had scratched a child in the face so badly it drew blood, mm-hmm. and the babysitter is also complaining about him hitting. And I don't know how to deal with it because of his mindset and the fact that he does have the mind of a 3-year-old. And I try to talk to him. I try to threaten to take away his cars. He's a Hot Wheel freak.
Mm-hmm.
And what he does is that's my Hot Wheels. You're not taking my cars.
Well,
and
let me just say this. Bad news is kid's autistic. Good news, he's straight.
Yeah.
So we did dodge the gay bullet there. You can thank God for that one. Sorry, Board Op Bill, but you know what I'm saying. Well, now he has the mind of a 3-year-old. Will his mind be of a 3-year-old when he's 33, or will it continue to grow just behind what the normal is chronological age is? Question number one. I don't know.
Well, yeah,
how does that work?
Hopefully he's going to catch up completely.
I mean, really?
He should. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, what I was saying earlier is that all toddlers are a little bit like cavemen anyway. Our toddlers are uncivilized. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, your job with a toddler is to civilize them, to teach them to say please and thank you, wait in line, don't spit and scratch.
Right.
And with autistic kids, since they have a delay in their ability to use language and relate socially, they're uncivilized for a longer period of time. So what you're dealing with in the preschool is exactly what, you know, it's normal to deal with a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, like you were saying. So what you want to do is don't try to use logic and reason too much. Even though a 5-year-old should understand that better, you've got to use more the technique for younger kids. And that technique is to use what I call toddlerese when he's upset. So before you give him, you tell him what you want him to know or what he has to do, you narrate back what you think he's feeling. So, like, if he's upset someone took his Hot Wheels, you'd say, like, you're mad, you want that Hot Wheels, you say, give it to me, you want that now. You repeat it 4 or 5 times with a little emotion in your voice, with some gestures to show him, I got it. I know how you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And especially for an autistic child, because they're working more on a nonverbal level. They don't understand every word you say,
mm-hmm.
but they understand your tone of voice and your gestures. That'll help settle him down a little bit because he'll feel understood. And then you give your message, but no scratching, sweetheart. Come on, let's say I'm sorry, or let's go over here and play. So you first acknowledge them, get him to know that you're on his side.
You mirror back his mood and sentiment.
You mirror back some of it. Not as much as he has, but some of it. Now, if he's done something that is like totally wrong and really attacked a child.
He set a bomb on fire.
Yeah, that kind of thing. You got to stop that right away.
Oh, I see.
You know, and so you're not going
to
be.
3-4 bombs in, it's time to put an end to that.
You don't like bombs. You hate bombs.
I hate bumps too. Me no likey bummy.
Set bummy on fire.
Well, Jennifer, I have been following this autism thing just from the cheap seats via Oprah and Jenny McCarthy and Holly Pete and all that kind of stuff. And they now say that if you kind of get hold of it and you spot it and diagnose it, you can work with it and develop it and the child can lead a normal life. So that's good news as of late, because in the past, I thought autism was sort of, not a death sentence, but at least a life sentence, as it appears. You can reverse some of the effects of it. Am I correct in saying that?
Yeah, absolutely. With therapy and
diet,
other support.
Something?
For some people, diet can be very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So I have one patient of mine who's now 19, real troubles in the beginning. And actually, when he turned to 18, he went to the improv here in L.A. and did a stand-up routine about being autistic. So, I mean, it just goes to show you that with a lot of support, these kids can do fantastically well. And so I'd be very optimistic about it.
How do you feel about
Can I quickly say, just speaking of autistic comedians, Dave Attell going to be in studio. And he doesn't have full-blown autism, but some would say a dusting.
It's a spectrum disease. That's he might be on there somewhere at one end or the other.
One would call it a light dusting of autism.
Sprinkling. I was going to ask about the really controversial connection between vaccines and autism, and a lot of moms in the autism community have been saying for years that they feel that when they vaccinated their child began to change.
Right, right. A lot of people say that. I was actually just on the Larry King show last week because of this case.
The verdict,
exactly right. The Poling family, where this child was just given an award because they said that these 9 vaccines the child got might have triggered
a financial award.
It was a financial award.
Right. Exactly. The child might have had sort of predisposition.
You do have to speak to Larry King the same way you speak to the toddler with autism.
You want soup.
You like soupy? We do deli.
No, you like suspenders.
You like suspenders and 28-year-old blondes? We go get deli.
You like getting married.
But here's the bottom line. All the studies show that this concept of mercury triggering the autism, that doesn't pan out. And the concept of the measles vaccine triggering the autism, that doesn't pan out for the vast majority of kids. So what I was saying is that there's a research project that we're trying to get started at the CDC in Atlanta. It's been roadblocked by the Bush administration right now, but this research project is called the National Child Study. And what we're doing is looking at 100,000 children from birth, doing a blood test and measuring all sorts of chemicals in their blood. And we want to follow them throughout childhood to see if we can make any correlations between what's in their blood and which kids get autism, which kids get diabetes later on, which kids get asthma. And if we can start making some correlations between chemical exposures and diseases. Because what we do know is that there are thousands of chemicals that kids are exposed to now that they were never exposed to.
Right.
Something's going on with autism. The rates have gone up.
It's increasing too fast.
It is, but not related. The immunization, I think, is going to end up being a dead end. That's not really what it's related to. For most kids, there might be occasional exceptions to that.
Dr. Harvey Karp in studio, the author of The Happiest Toddler on the Block. Go to the Happiest Baby.com for more information. So I just went through this with my kids, and I basically said, look, just get them immunized, and I'm not buying into it. Although I understand that's the theory. These theories get floated all the time in our society, and I've been around long enough to hear how microwave ovens were going to kill you and how, you know, we're all going to be living underground by the year 2000 and things like that. Can I ask this? And I've had this conversation with my wife, although I don't know. I'm speaking as a layperson. Is it possible that there's a sort of an ebb and a flow with things like diseases? Like nature just says, in this year's or this span, there will be more autism, and then in these years, there will be less autism. And, you know, you hear things like, For instance, kids are allergic to everything today. They weren't allergic to everything, or they didn't seem to be allergic to everything when I was growing up. When I was growing up, I didn't know any kids that were allergic to peanuts or had peanut allergies. Now every third kid has a peanut allergy. Mm-hmm. Do more kids actually have peanut allergies, or are we just so hypersensitive that we're assigning an allergy to everybody?
No. There are definitely more peanut allergies.
And what
there
has are more allergies. That?
And there's more asthma. Asthma's like doubled over the last 20 years or so. What's causing it? We don't know. But there's one theory about that, which is that we're too clean, believe it or not.
Aha.
If you look at exposing kids to dirt when they're little, believe it, it's completely the opposite of what we were taught. You know, wash it off, don't put it in your mouth.
Yeah.
But it turns out that being exposed to just normal dirt and grime here and there helps to build up the immune system. And we believe that that lowers the risk of allergies. So like the peanut allergy may be related to that.
But so we're raising our kids in a bubble. They're not getting exposed to what they need to get exposed to. And I assume, I mean, it's like I tell my wife when our kids get sick and she goes into a panic, I just sort of, I'm an atheist, but I believe nature knows what they're doing. And kids get sick, and I assume it's for a reason. I want to get them the help they need when they really get sick. But when the kid gets a cold, I just go, kids are supposed to get colds. They ride it out for a few days, and then they move on, and that's the cycle, and it's probably a good thing. I don't want to raise them in a hefty bag filled with Purell.
No, that's exactly right. But they're not supposed to get autism.
Right.
And autism has increased. Part of the increase in autism, we now believe, is related to re-diagnosing it. In other words, some kids who used to be called mentally retarded are now being labeled as having autism.
It.
We're better diagnosing it.
So if you had a baby, let's say tomorrow, would you vaccinate your own baby?
In a heartbeat, absolutely yes. Because, you never feel totally right as a parent going in and having them put something foreign in your kid's body.
Right.
I mean, it feels like a wrong thing to do. But when you know the history of these diseases, it's like that, remember that movie Pass It Forward?
Mm-hmm.
Your kids benefit from the fact that all these other kids have been getting immunized for the last 15 years. So you don't have measles and whooping cough around and polio around. So you've got to get your kids immunized to help protect your next kids or your neighbor's next kids. It's critically important. I mean, there's maybe some leeway where you can put things off a little bit or delay it a little bit.
But bottom line, get them immunized.
Yeah,
can I ask you quickly, getting back to one thing, you say you're having trouble with the Bush administration in terms of funding this project.
Strategery.
Why is there trouble with the Bush administration?
Well,
is it just a purely financial thing, or is there some sort of implication involving stem cells or something like that?
No, it's not a stem cell type thing. You never know exactly what's going on. I mean, this has not been an administration that's really been encouraging of scientific discovery. But most likely it's a financial thing, that they're trying to cut budgets everywhere they can to help fund other things that are the priorities.
All right, we need to take ourselves a break. I feel like we could go on forever, and
Dr.
we have a
Karp
thousand calls.
And by the way, Adam,
as well.
We should say that Dr. Karp is a doctor the way Dr. Drew is, which is that if there was somebody having a heart attack on an airplane and you needed a doctor, you are an actual pediatrician. You could save a passenger.
That's right.
Been there, done that. Yeah.
So if a three-year-old goes into cardiac arrest on an airplane,
your heart is stopping.
Dr. Karp will go talk to him like I talk to my dog, Molly. Go pee-pee. No barky. Make pee-pee. Shut up and take more phone calls. All right, we'll take ourselves a break. Dr. Harvey Karp, the happiest toddler on the block. Go to thehappiestbaby.com. Let's do this again soon, shall we,
thanks,
doctor?
Thanks very much,
so
guys.
Much.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Tease the news before we go to break.
Some updates in the Elliot Spitzer case, an early candidate for the worst mom of the year. You won't believe that story. And celebrity rehab reunion. Who stayed on the wagon? Who fell off?
Quick break. Back with that and Dave Attell next.
That's right. Y'all got Adam Carolla and Teresa right here on 97.1 Free 2 HD.
KLSX, HD2 Los Angeles, 97.1 Free HD2, SoCal's high-definition FM talk station.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show.
The ice caps are melting, people! People always say it that way, the ice caps are melting. Maybe there's some really cool shit under those ice caps. I mean, like treasure. Or even better than treasure, a talking dinosaur.
who we can all have adventures with. Me first, I thought it up.
Dave Attell is on the Adam Carolla Show.
Dave Attell.
Hello,
best,
Adam.
Best stand-up out there working
Adam,
these days. Yes.
I'm enjoying this volume thing here.
Mm-hmm. Feels good, doesn't
yeah.
it? It's nice in the morning.
Wait, I can't hear you. Now I can. Say something.
My best stuff was said when you were potted down. Dave Attell is going to be at the Brea Improv tonight through Sunday. And as I've said before, you know, people talk about seeing great comedians and being inspired. Yeah. I'm discouraged.
Why?
I saw Dave Attell with Jimmy Kimmel 10 years ago in San Francisco and said, well, I'll never be that good at stand-up, so screw it.
Yeah, but you have so many other talents. Now, is it true that you're doing, well, I don't know if it's been out yet, but are you doing a show that rhymes with Dancing with the Stars?
It's not been discussed.
Oh. It hasn't?
But, yes, that is this Monday. And if another person comes up to me and innocently asks me if I'm nervous, I will throttle
no,
your ass.
I'm going to ask
so
you blatantly, are you gay?
Gay? I'm nervous I have AIDS.
I mean, what happened to you?
Dude, are you gay?
No, really, what happened? 10 years ago, whores on trampolines, now this?
He's
first
pressing
off,
his groin against a beautiful 19-year-old 3 hours a day. How is that gay?
What's his name? No, really.
Strumpets on trampolines.
No, really, that is a sign of, I guess, growing up. Up, right?
Let
you want to be on the show? I mean, watching it is, you feel like you're an old man, but being on it.
I'll offer this, and then we'll get into the news with Dave. First off, you know, everyone acts like everything's black and white, 100%. A lot of stuff in life is 60-40, you know what I mean?
So
even closer. You know, when your agent says to you, hey, do you want to do Dancing with the Stars? It didn't go like, hey, do you want to? Yes! It was more like, you know, that's how most things are in life. So people go, why did you marry this woman? Or why did you do this show? Or why did you buy that car? And it's not always, I needed to, I had to, I lived for it. A lot of it was, it was a coin toss. So frankly, Dancing with Stars, a coin toss. But let me say this about Dancing with Stars. Let me make this quick analogy. I feel like in season one, season two, season three, there was that element, much like a guy with a pierced ear in the 50s. You know what I mean? Like, if in 1957 your son came home from college and he had a pierced ear, you would have beat the crap out of him. Like, some dad with a crew cut would have thrown down the sports page, put down his highball, and just started beating the bejesus out of his son. Now your kid comes home with an earring, it's like, it's acceptable. Well, I feel like Dancing with the Stars has become acceptable in the last couple of seasons.
All right, well.
Yes?
I mean, that's a great way of dancing around whore for the money, because I've hoarded it up for cash.
Sure.
But I know that you like were a boxer and all that stuff, so I'm sure you'll do fine with the dancing around and all that stuff, but there is something about Dancing with the Stars that doesn't work for me, because first of all, I don't see any real stars on there anymore. I'm not putting you in that category.
No, I agree.
Like a Marie Osmond, okay?
Right.
Like, let's put it in other situations. Hey, Adam, I'm having a big party. There's going to be a lot of stars there.
Oh.
Like who? Oh, Marie Osmond? I don't think you're coming to that party, are you?
What if I said Jerry Rice and Emmett Smith?
Yeah, exactly. What?
No,
maybe if we were having a Tyler Perry barbecue press release party. But
people say, nice racial angle.
That was racial?
That's edgy racial. Look. Yes, look, people say this all the time. They go like, you know, fill in the blank with the stars, skating with the stars, or I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. And they go, please, those aren't real celebrities. Well, good luck getting John Travolta and Brad Pitt into a dunk tank filled with yak urine. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, you're just not going to get, Jennifer Aniston to go, hey, I know I got $20 million on the table here, but I need to spend the next 3 months training at a dank studio somewhere so I can get a little FaceTime on ABC. I mean, you're never really, when you do celebrity anything, You're never going to get real celebrities. Like, you know, the Celebrity Apprentice is not going to be one. We got Robert Redford, Paul Newman, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie. I mean, it's always going to be a country star you've never heard
Nadia
of.
Nadia Comaneci.
An athlete that retired 20 years ago. I mean, let's face
it. Yeah, but you already have it. Aren't you taking work away from a Baldwin? I mean, by doing this show?
It is true.
I think they're all employed on other reality shows currently.
The good news is Daniel and Steven.
It's a good point. All I'm going to say is good luck, and I've never seen you make more eye contact with me. I guess you're enraged with me bringing it up, but I was
taught by my partner to establish eye contact.
Oh, is that how many times a week do you have to meet?
Oh, barely, just like six.
Oh, that's like one less than AA.
Right, pretty much as painless, except for no cake when you learn
six
the
times
Fox
a week
trot.
For like all day.
Yes, yeah. Well, six times. Let's put it this way: six times a week. 2 to 3 hours a day, and I'm going light. A lot of people are going 6 hours a day.
Wow. Does he tell you like that you have to, whoever your instructor?
Hot chick. That's what makes it less gay. Right. But I appreciate you assuming it was a man.
No, I don't know. I figured there was like a Obi-Wan or something.
No, that, there's
some guy with a pole and a, banging on a...
No, your partner teaches.
No guy in a hooded frock leaning against a shepherd's pole.
And what's
telling
the prize again? What do they win?
A little something called pride.
It's actually possibly the worst trophy in all of sport, the mirror ball trophy.
It is. It's difficult, again, and as I was explaining, and here's something interesting and philosophical I sort of got into when I was doing an interview about this yesterday. As an adult, when is the last time you put in 25 hours a week doing something you were horrible at and didn't want to do outside of stand-up, Dave?
No, I put stand-up in that category, too, sometimes.
No, but what I mean is like... I was screaming at Kimmel the other night. Do you understand that for 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, for 3 months, when the dust settled, I could be a great banjo player or speak fluent Korean or be able to fight in mixed martial arts? Like, think about the skills. Like, your life is pretty much you go to work, you're good at going to tea, you're good at your job. Dave, you're good at your job. I'm good at my job. Then there's your hobbies, whatever it is you like to do, watch sports, whatever, kick a soccer ball, masturbate, whatever it is. You've definitely mastered that. And then you hang out with the people you want to hang out. But when is the last time, like since high school, somebody said, you've got to do this, and you've went, I'm no good at math. I don't like math. And they went, tough ass. You're doing it for an hour a day, 5 days a week, and you're going to learn trigonometry.
Wow.
When's the last time you stuffed yourself into that position or that role? You haven't. You see, as an adult, you just do stuff that feels good. You just do stuff that's easy, and you get rewarded, and it's easier. You're great at doing stand-up. You get paid to do stand-up. And then when you're not doing stand-up, you basically do the stuff you want to do. When's the last someone yanked your chain, pulled you out of your sleepwalk, Dave Attell, and forced you to do something? Here's the real crime. The real crime is the second I get thrown off of Dancing with the Stars will be the last time I ever dance again. Whereas if I put this time into speaking a second language or playing the clarinet, it's something I could do for the rest of my life. You see what I'm saying? I could be, I essentially could be a chef. If I did it for 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, with the top, I have the top instructor on the planet. I have the best dance instructor on the planet teaching me dance for 3 hours a day, 6 days a week, and the day I do my last dance on that show will be the last time I put on dancing shoes. Well, that's a shame.
It seems very Hollywood to me, so, I mean, that's all I'm saying. And I see you as a Hollywood outsider. I mean, couldn't you put some of that time into other Hollywood things like... Animal Rescue, maybe, or Reef, something. Something
head,
with the reef.
Head down with the chick from Heroes and go save some dolphins in Japan.
Could you? Could you dance with those poor pie?
Dave Attell, can I ask you, have you ever taken a gig in your long show business career that you were slightly embarrassed about?
Oh, yeah, tons of them.
He's going to be at the Bray Improv tonight.
No, really, I really am. So.
Any leap to mind?
But, I mean, there's some TV things that I've done that I regret.
Like?
I was the host of the Rock, Paper, Scissors competition. So
on what network?
Exactly. So yeah, that didn't really catch on. And the worst part about it was, I knew what it was when I was getting in there, because it's like they had this big competition in bars all over, like to who's the best at this rock, paper, scissors thing. So I thought it was going to be like kind of a free form, you know, like drinking kind of whatever.
Yeah, you can be funny. And
I get there and they hand me a script that was like, it was like, I guess the pages that didn't make it into Atonement. It was like this long, 300-page, you know. I didn't know so many rules. Or luckily, we were doing it in Mexico. There wasn't many rules, but yeah, I didn't have fun doing it.
How many rules could there be involved
with
rock, paper, scissors?
They actually just played the hand game, rock, paper, scissors.
Yeah, and I thought always rock wins. I mean, I didn't want to throw
away. That's the whole game.
I thought so.
It was a big deal.
No, paper covers rock.
There's a hot chick that won the competition like 3 years ago. She was on Kimmel.
I didn't see that.
There's an actual, you know, method to their madness. All right, we need to take a break. T?
Yes.
Are you prepared with the news?
I'm equally prepared.
All right. Dave Attell in studio. Find him on Dancing with the Stars Monday night. I'll be at the Brea Improv.
I'm sorry to bring it up,
awkwardly,
but I heard about
trying
it.
To get through Dave's set. No, Brea Improv tonight through Sunday. Dave's going to hang out with us. We will do the news, I promise, next on The Adam Carolla Show.
Hey, yo. Think you got the chops to be an FM docker?
What?
Oh, good, because 97.1's looking for America's next great talk stud.
What?
Here's what you do. Go to 97.1freefm.com, click on the next great talk stud button to find out the hot topic of the week.
Oops.
Then do a 5-minute mini show on that topic and upload it right there on the same page. If you don't suck that bad, we might put you in our 9 o'clock Friday night talk stud showcase.
Premiering Friday, April 11th on our free 2 HD stream.
Are you
America's next great talk stud?
What the crap?
Then prove it.
97.1freefm.com.
This is the future of radio, and you know you're listening to it because you're never tardy. This is 97.1 Free 2 HD.
Hey, if it's Adam Carolla all day, you gotta have some crank yankers, right? Here's another great one on 97.1 Free 2 HD.
Miss Bob, can I help you?
Bob?
Yes.
I was in there the other day with my kids.
Okay.
And my kids were playing around in that ball pit.
Okay.
And there was an old man lying at the bottom of the ball pit.
He was doing what?
He was just lying there.
Lying there?
Yeah.
Where?
In the ball pit.
What do you mean the guy was in there?
I mean, there was an old man.
Inside it?
Yes. At the bottom.
Inside the ball pit.
He was balls deep in the ball pit.
When was this?
Yesterday.
What time?
Bob, I don't know. I was in there with my kids. We were there for a good little while.
Why didn't you come and tell me?
Because I didn't know if he was a worker or if that was part of what y'all think is fun, but I didn't think it was fun. And my kid, you know, he comes running to me. He's like, Mama, there's a snake in the ball pit. And I was like, what's he talking about, snake? So I go and check. I was like, what the hell are you doing in here with these kids? And he said, oh, I was on my way to get a pack of cigarettes and got lost. That's what he said.
Well, you know, I can't believe you didn't come over and tell.
You know, like when something happens and you're just shocked and you don't know what to say. And my boy kept asking me like, Mom, how come he got white hairy balls? And I just grabbed my son, just got the hell out of there. Cause
My goodness. I wish you would have told me something about something like that.
Well, you better mind your balls. You got some perverts in there, baby.
Never seen one before and never had a complaint of anything ever to sort of this.
Well, maybe some of the kids enjoy it. You know?
Oh, boy.
You know, I brought my boy in there to play with some plastic balls, not some old man balls.
Yeah, but listen to me. If it ever happens again, you just come to me right away. Please.
I will do that.
Thank you.
And I'll come to you, and you will clean those balls, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
I'm David Allen Greer, and you're listening to 97.1 Free 2 HD, the FM talk station where FM stands for Funny Mama Jamma.
Back to the Adam Carolla Show. In theaters March 21st, Adam Carolla in The Hammer.
Maybe after I knock you out, we can spend some time really connecting. But in the meantime, this ain't no Big Brother program.
That's good. Take that energy, take that hostility and harness it. Use it. You got the eye of the asshole, my brother.
Go to AdamCarolla.com and register to win tickets to see the world premiere of The Hammer at the ArcLight Hollywood Cinemas on Wednesday, March 19th. The Hammer in theaters Friday, March 21st. Now back to The Adam Carolla Show.
And Dave Attell, who's going to be at the Brea Improv tonight through Sunday. Two shows tonight and Saturday night. Now, better late than never, Teresa Strasser in her news.
Teresa Strasser with tomorrow's news today.
This headline brought to you by our content partners at MSN.com. The investigation continues into whether Elliot Spitzer, soon to be former governor of New York, used campaign money to pay for prostitutes. Federal authorities are reviewing Governor Spitzer's campaign finance records, looking for irregularities. If campaign money was used in arranging the meetings with the high-priced call girls, it could spell a lot more legal trouble for Spitzer. It is illegal to use campaign dollars for personal expenses, and I would guess high-priced hookers would be filed under personal expense.
And as a New York State resident, I can't believe he didn't get several hookers for that amount of money.
Yeah,
exactly.
The high price I would have a problem with. Yeah,
especially
hookers
in Buffalo. That's where, you know, the state of government is. Buffalo,
really?
Which is pretty boring, but, you know, he could have gotten his pick of
pretty
much
the love of Christ, this isn't Dubai. For $20, you can get yourself a BJ in your Cherokee in a parking lot of the Zodis. What?
Yeah.
$5,000? If I was his wife, that would be my main angle with the argument.
Yeah, this isn't a .com. This is a state. You know,
right.
We don't have that kind of money to throw around.
Let's go now. We could have built another public school or a wheelchair ramp.
Well, the allegations.
All the banging you've been doing.
Animal rescue.
The allegations about what he spent. We know about Kristen. Her real name, Ashley Alexandra Dupre. That's actually another fake name, which she chose for her career as a musician, a budding musician. She allegedly charged $1,000 an hour.
Right.
To Governor Spitzer. This is her single, What We Want.
Mm-hmm.
Doing very well now on the internet.
How much does it cost to listen to this?
98 cents.
Okay. Can I ask the hooker time? When they say an hour, is that like the therapist 50 minutes? Or once you pop your shot, does the clock stop? Or how does that work? Is there a refractory period? Mm.
You're looking at maybe 40 minutes, really. The rest of it is, are you sure you're not a cop?
A lot of that.
Is that a wire? What's up? Are you a cop?
Do you have a boombox?
She used to have a MySpace page before it was taken down yesterday. 5 million people checked that out after this scandal broke. And if she can't get a record deal, a lot of experts think she should be able to get a book deal.
Mm-hmm.
That seems a fait accompli.
You know, that really muddies MySpace because, you know, MySpace is supposed to be, you know, friends and whatnot, you know, Tila Tequila and stuff like that, you know, people of, you know, certain standing. And
right.
Now right.
Jezebel.
Be a one-upper, like I said before.
It's really giving a black eye to the good name of MySpace.
Which doesn't clog up all my band requests.
You know, for the pedophiles and all, I mean. It's just never, go ahead.
Well, the publisher of Penthouse says she would consider giving Ashley the cover and, quote, we promise to make it worth her while.
She?
Yeah. Diane. Oh.